It's the TED Radio Hour from NPR. I'm Guy Raz. And on the show today, ideas about how technology and a crowded planet will change almost everything we know about getting from point A to point B. And our first story begins about half a century ago.
Dans les deux oreilles, a priori. Donc ça a l'air mieux. On va voir par rapport à vous, mais là ça a l'air bien.
Was there like a moment when you knew that you wanted to explore the skies?
Yes, a very precise moment. That was in July 1969.
Liftoff. We have a liftoff. 32 minutes past the hour. Liftoff on Apollo 11.
This is Bertrand Piccard.
I am at the same time medical doctor and explorer and...
In July 1969, the Apollo 11 launched to the moon. Bertrand Piccard was 11 years old at the time, and he was there to see it happen. And that launch, it wasn't Bertrand's first.
Exactly. I was fortunate enough to see six Apollo take off.
We have ignition.
Apollo 7.
Liftoff. We have
8.
We have liftoff.
9.
Liftoff. We have liftoff.
10, 11, and 12.
Liftoff. 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 We have liftoff. 11:22 a.m. Eastern Standard Time.
So how does an 11-year-old get to witness six Apollo takeoffs? Well, Bertrand's dad took him because he was an explorer, too. He was a deep-sea submarine diver. And that same week as Apollo 11...
My father started his dive in the Gulf Stream with a submarine he had built. There was a crew of six people, and he made a drift mission underwater from Palm Beach, Florida, to New Scotland.
Which is also known as Nova Scotia. Anyway, Bertrand's dad, Jacques, was also the first man, along with Don Walsh, to reach the bottom of the Marianas Trench. More people have walked on the moon than have been to the Marianas Trench. It's the deepest underwater spot on Earth. And Jacques' father, Auguste?
My grandfather made the first flight ever into the stratosphere, and he invented the pressurized cabin, and he was the first man to see the curvature of the Earth with his own eyes. And you know what is so strange is to see that he made his first flight in the stratosphere with a tie. He had a jacket and a tie. No flying suit.
So it must have been incredible to grow up like this, I mean, around those guys.
You know, what was really strange was the fact that as long as it was inside my family, I thought it was normal. So there was no limit for me between my dreams as a child and the reality that I could see through all the people I met.
Okay, so back to that week in July 1969. Bertrand's dad, fresh off his undersea mission, wanted his son to see the men who were headed to the moon.
And I met most of the astronauts also the evening before.
And you were just a kid.
Yeah, I was 11 years old. But you know, it's a fabulous moment where you open yourself to the world because you know at that age you still have everything to learn. So you're very receptive to everything. And it was so fascinating to see these 2 feats of exploration down and up in the same week. And I thought that's the type of life I would like to have.
So that's the type of life he chose.
Two Europeans attempting to go around the world in a balloon have broken the record for the longest flying time by a hot air balloon without refueling or stopping. Brian Jones of England and Bertrand Piccard of Switzerland.
In 1999, 30 years after he watched Apollo 11 go to the moon, Bertrand and Brian Jones became the first men to circle the globe in a hot air balloon. It took them 20 days. They flew as high as 37,000 feet and as fast as 160 miles an hour. And the pressurized capsule that they traveled in, it now sits at the Smithsonian Air and Space Museum in Washington, D.C., right next to the Apollo 11 command module. And at a press conference after he landed, reporters asked Bertrand.
Several people have asked what you will be doing next, and should there be other around-the-world balloon missions? Would you all comment on that?
Well, a lot of people say that it's the ultimate flight and there's nothing left. Probably the people said that after the Wright brothers' flight. So
and just like the Wright brothers' flight eventually led to transatlantic travel and jet airplanes, Bertrand's balloon trip was actually the start of another mission, a mission that could change the way we all travel. Here's Bertrand telling a story from the TED stage.
Well, the unknown is part of life. And in that sense, ballooning is a beautiful metaphor. Because in a balloon, like in life, we want to go in a direction, but the winds push us in another direction, like in life. And as long as we fight horizontally against life, against the winds. Life is a nightmare. When Brian Jones and I were flying around the world, the weatherman asked us one day to fly quite low and very slow. And when we calculated, we thought we're never going to make it around the world at that speed. So we disobeyed. We flew much higher and doubled the speed. And I was so proud to have found that jet stream that I called the weatherman and I told him, hey guy, don't you think we're good pilots up there? We fly twice the speed you predicted. And he told me, don't do that. Go down immediately in order to slow down. And I started to argue. I said, I'm not going to do that. We don't have enough gas to fly so slow. And he told me, yes, but with the low pressure you have on your left, if you fly too fast, in a couple of hours, you will turn left and end up at the North Pole. And then he asked me, and this is something I will never forget in my life. He just asked me, you're the good pilot up there. What do you really want? You want to go very fast in the wrong direction or slowly in the good direction? And this is why you need weathermen. This is why you need people with long-term vision. So we went down, actually. We slowed down. And we went through moments of fears because we had no idea how the little amount of gas we had in the balloon could allow us to travel 45,000 kilometers. But we accepted to have doubts. We accepted to have fears. And actually, this is where the adventure really started.
Which brings us back to Bertrand's idea for the future of transportation, because on that flight, that balloon flight in 1999, somewhere in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, Bertrand and his partner, Brian Jones, were struggling to find the jet stream that would take them across the ocean, and they were burning way too much fuel.
We were a little afraid, Brian and I. We talked about it, had the butterflies in the stomach.
So this is audio from a recording Bertrand made inside the capsule at the time, drifting over the ocean. And when they finally touched down in the Egyptian desert after 20 days...
It's fabulous. Thank you.
Bertrand and his partner looked at a line of frost on their last fuel tank, and they realized just how close they came to not making it.
That's how much fuel we've got left.
After three weeks. And 40,000 kilometers.
What a wonderful piece of planning on our behalf.
So it was almost empty when you landed.
Yeah, absolutely. There were probably two more hours of duration after 20 days of flight.
When I saw that, I made a promise to myself. I made the promise that the next time I would fly around the world, it would be with no fuel. Independent from fossil energies. In order to be safe, not to be threatened by the fuel gauge. I had no idea how it was possible. I just thought, it's a dream, and I want to do it. And when the capsule of my balloon was introduced officially in the Air and Space Museum in Washington, together with the airplane of Charles Lindbergh, with Apollo 11, with the Wright Brothers Flyer, with Chuck Yeager's X-1, I had really a thought then. I thought, well, the 20th century, that was brilliant. It allowed to do all these things there. But it will not be possible in the future anymore. It takes too much energy. It will cost too much. It will be prohibited because we'll have to save our natural resources in a few decades from now. So how can we perpetuate this pioneering spirit with something that will be independent from fossil energy?
Pioneering spirit for me means to observe what we have learned to do and what we have learned to think and to believe and try something else. It's an active, disruptive behavior from what we have learned to what we would like to achieve.
And that disruptive thing for Bertrand? An airplane that flies day and night, entirely on solar energy. He's already flown it across the U.S. And next year, over the course of 5 months, Bertrand Piccard plans to fly that plane. It's called the Solar Impulse. He plans to fly it around the world. And he wants to prove that a new revolution in transportation technology is actually within reach.
So the idea is that if we fly around the world in a solar-powered airplane, using absolutely no fuel, nobody ever could say in the future that it's impossible to do it for cars, for heating systems, for computers, and so on and so on. And this is exactly the symbol of our world. If our airplane is too heavy, if the pilot wastes his energy, we'll never make it through the night. And in our world, if we keep on spoiling, wasting our energy resources, if we keep on building things that consume so much energy that most of the companies now go bankrupt, it's clear that we'll never give the planet to the next generation without a major problem. So you see that this airplane is more a symbol. I don't think it will transport 200 people in the next years. But when Lindbergh crossed the Atlantic, the payload was also just sufficient for one person and some fuel. And 20 years later, there were 200 people in every airplane crossing the Atlantic. People will tell you it's impossible, and it's exactly why we try to do it.
And in 50 years, if we still need to use fuel, air travel will be in trouble, really in trouble, because we'll be in a world of renewable energies where there will be either a lot of restrictions and regulations about fossil energy, or maybe just a price of fossil energy that will be so high that people won't use it anymore.
Do you see, like, can you imagine a future where we get around, either locally or transcontinentally, like through solar power? Like, solar power will generate the energy to move us around?
I would be crazy to say yes and stupid to say no. Because today we don't have the technology to move everybody on solar power. But don't forget, when Charles Lindbergh flew across the Atlantic, he was alone on board. And we had to wait for maybe 25 or 30 more years before they could be commercial airliners. So we just have to insufflate the pioneering spirit, which means to open new doors. We have to understand now that we have to be open to change. All the people who fight to keep their old technologies are people who will disappear.
Bertrand Piccard's talk can be found at ted.npr.org. You can also check out what his team is up to at solarimpulse.com. Our show today, Transport for a Crowded Planet. I'm Guy Raz, and you're listening to the TED Radio Hour from NPR.